Let's go.
Welcome to Micromobility, a podcast exploring the disruptive potential of small electric vehicles. We cover the best companies building these amazing new vehicles, as well as topics relevant to how they impact people, cities, and our planet. My name is Oliver Bruce, an investor in mobility and climate tech, and my co-host is Horace Dedieu, founder of Asimco.com and Micromobility Industries. Hey team, Oliver here. This week I interview Uri Mirador from City Transformer. You may have come across City Transformer as it was on the recent Top Gear episode of Microcars in Paris, which we discuss on this episode. Obviously, I've done a few microcar episodes week on week, so this is an area that I'm definitely thinking about, as well as McKinsey, who I had actually had on the week prior, talking about mini mobility. It feels like such a burgeoning area, and I've been really excited to explore this topic. This conversation in particular was really good. I really enjoyed Udi's perspective. If you enjoy this conversation, you will definitely also enjoy Micromobility Europe. I would really encourage you to come and join us if you can, June 8th and 9th, 2023 in Amsterdam. This will be a collection of over 1,000 top thinkers and builders in the space, building everything from e-bikes and scooters all the way through to vehicles like the one that we are discussing on this show today. I am really excited with the companies that are going to be coming and cannot wait to get there and to see everybody. Get your tickets at micromobility.io. And with that, here is Udi.
Let's go.
And welcome back to Micromobility. We have with us today Udi Mirador, the co-founder of City Transformer. How are you doing today, Udi?
Perfect. Nice to meet you. Finally meeting you.
Yeah. Look, I've been following your work for a long time, and it's a real privilege to have you on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I think maybe the best part that we start with is, what is the City Transformer? Because I think it is such a unique vehicle that I'm going to do it a disservice trying to describe it.
It's actually, a City Transformer is all about movement of moving cities, moving people in cities. And when we look at humanity, actually, and when we, first of all, move to the big cities, some of parts of our team, also my friend and co-founder, Asa Formosa. So we wanted to enjoy the life in the big city, social life, everything related to it. But eventually we found ourselves stuck in traffic, looking for parkings, and pretty much frustrated from the situation. Now, when you zoom out and you take a step backward, you take a look at the whole picture, want to make sure that you are at Tel Aviv. It's not the only city that is really suffering from it. And then you find out that it's a much more of a global phenomenon, not just a local phenomenon. And the really astonishing thing about it is that when you look a century ago and back to today, you see that a lot of improvements was man-made and happened to humanity. So whether it's technology, AI, robotics, and other, whether it's equality or quality of life, lifespan, and other. So a lot of things have improved. Urban mobility is one thing that actually got worse. And that's, I mean, take, for example, maybe the average speed in London, which is 17 kilometers per hour. Some will say even less. But you can do the same with a horse and carriage at 19 kilometers per hour a century ago.
Yes.
So we are actually going in the wrong direction. And that's when we understood that we need to do something and create something with a very, very super small form factor in order to really create an impact.
Yeah. And so the vehicle itself is it's a variable width microcar is the best way that I can describe it. Am I doing it justice?
Yes. So we developed our own mechanism, which is an adaptive width mechanism, but the whole idea around it is to solve the problems of cities. Now, when cities are clogged, and we all know it, also in the micro mobility solution, but if you want to go to a different kind of a solution that will have more people that will use it. I mean, There are people that are keen for micromobility, for e-scooters, e-bikes, but there are others, some of them elderly or disabilities or with small kids or just prefer other way of moving around in cities in terms of weather protection or safety. So you need to create something which is in a form factor of a car, I mean, closed cabin user experience. But if you really want to do it right, you need to make it at the footprint of a motorcycle.
Yes.
And creating a footprint of a motorcycle, so you cannot do it because of stability. So either go for the iRoad solution, Toyota iRoad, which is a tilting solution, and Nimbus these days. We found out, at least to our notion, that there are people that would look at it as fun and would like it very much. But there are other people that haven't driven a motorcycle and for the first time will need to take their key to the kindergarten with this shared mobility solution and will prefer maybe not to use it because it's not the common way to drive in a car.
Yes.
So for us, bringing the people from cars and attracting the people from cars, which is the most important thing because there the impact lies, you need to create something which is like a car, sits on the road, safe and confident with a steering wheel and just driving parallel and not tilting from side to side.
Totally. I hear you. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Nimbus and or the iRoad. I think they're like, I can't still understand why Toyota hasn't shipped that thing. I think that they, when we come back to it, like the context of this is that I think as we have been discussing micromobility over the last 5 years on this podcast, and we think about this and we build the micromobility show and we do the conference, and there's been so much, like we've proven that scooters and e-bikes and there's so much demand for them. Like everybody, there's a lot of people who want that. And e-motorbikes are really like going to be, I think they will become a thing as well. A lot of people will look at that and say, I didn't want a motorbike. I didn't want a gas-powered motorbike, but I'd be open to an electric motorbike. I want more power. I want more performance than I was getting out of my electric bike. But at some point, people are going to say, yeah, but I also want safety. I want protection. I want to be able to go the same speed as cars on the road. But I don't want a whole car. I feel like that's way too overkill, like owning an entire vehicle. And so I have been looking for something in this space. And, you know, naturally it's like, okay, as you say, the options are doing something that's the size of a motorbike, and but it has a cabin, it has a steering wheel, it has those things. You either make it tilt, which is, I think, a valid idea and challenges with that, absolutely, 100%. Or you do something like yours. And so yours, talk me through that kind of variable width element to it. So you're driving down the road. You're in a small location. You want to be able to zip through something. It's a narrow base. Like, how wide is that? And then when you get onto a motorway, like how fast can you go? How does that work?
So for us, the benchmark was getting to as narrow as a motorcycle, which is in a lot of places a legal motorcycle width is 1 meter.
Right.
And that was our benchmark. Also with discussion with different OEMs, actually. And it was pretty much interesting, at least one of them that also built the iRoad that mentioned it as a magic number for 1 meter.
Yeah.
And if you want to do it because of stability issues, we said, okay, if we focus on 1 meter, we now have to create something that will compensate in higher speeds because we don't want to limit our users to 40 kilometers or 35 kilometers per hour.
Sure.
So let's create something that maybe a naive or crazy approach changes the dimension of the chassis. So when you need it, it's as narrow as a motorcycle, legal motorcycle, 1 meter. When you need it, it gets wider at 40% or actually to 1.4 meters. So you get the extra safety, stability, and visibility, and making sure that everything is fluent while driving. So you don't need to stop in your place, try to change the chassis in each and every way. So we actually worked for a few years, 3 years of bootstrap R&D and a few years afterwards, going through dozens of different mechanisms that we developed, both steering, folding mechanism, because the steering is unique at our case as well, and make sure that it passes regulation, as well as the control, the unique control over it. So eventually everything happens while you drive. So you start your driving at 1 meter because that's the way you pack four of them in a single parking place.
Yes.
And then when you start driving, the vehicles currently automatically widens in a push of a button, but in the future it will be autonomous, and that's what we are working. Autonomously widens and narrows the vehicle. So you can drive up to 90 kilometers per hour at the wider mode and up to 40 kilometers per hour at the narrow mode. And the narrow mode is not only for parking, but it's mainly sometimes zipping through traffic or in the future narrow transportation lane, as well as area, restricted area in specific cities that are limited to motorcycles or others, usually in European or mid-European or city centers in Europe. And there you have the option to start and negotiate with municipalities just because you're at the footprint of a motorcycle.
I think that's a very interesting point about the whether or not a city will look at this. I'm still not yet convinced that cities are going to look at the micro cars and say, this is sufficiently different from a car that we're going to treat it as a separate thing? And I am very curious, like, actually, maybe we go there. What is the classification for this kind of type of vehicle? Like, under and where have you classified it? Or like, where have you gone for any sort of homologation or like sign off yet?
Yeah. So classical classification of it is L70, which is the heavy quad. The reason to go for L7 and not for L6, which is limited in 45 kilometers per hour, is because L7, we believe that sometimes in the cities, even if you're stuck in traffic and the average speed is 17 or 15 kilometers per hour, from time to time, when you have this opportunity to drive 50 or 60 kilometers per hour, and you will be the one that is limiting all the traffic and you're in a small vehicle, you feel unsecured at the moment or unconfident. And for this, you need the ability to drive faster when you need.
Totally.
Although most of the time you will not use it.
Yes.
Now, so when doing it, we looked at what's the best way and how the best way to have this L7. And L7 is limited by three parameters. One of them is not overcoming 90 kilometers per hour.
Right. Okay.
Secondly is 450 kilograms excluding batteries.
Yes.
And the third one is 15 kilowatt, which is around approximately 18 horsepower, which is more than sufficient, actually. And I had the privilege to be in one of Horace's lectures or presentations. And the average, it's completely crazy to have 2 tons vehicle as an average vehicle almost today, just to carry a single passenger in the suitcase most of the time.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's mad. I 100% agree with you. So the vehicle itself is an L70, like, are there particular cities around the world that are saying, hey, like L70s are fine, we're okay with them, and we're going to classify them in the same category as motorbikes and scooters and bikes, etc., and say, like, we will allow them to be in a city? Versus, I mean, there aren't that many. That's the other part about it as well. Like, there aren't that many L70s. When I'm saying an L70, by the way, folks who are listening to this, an L70 is the classification within the EU for a heavy quad. A heavy quadricycle meets those criteria that Udi was saying. But there aren't that many of them like that are for sale. So, but they're definitely the sort of, I can see the micro car category that's going to be coming down the pipe. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
First of all, I think that you're absolutely right. It's a relatively immature market. It's the first steps of the market. And as you probably had Kirsten from McKinsey.
Yes, I did.
So the forecast that talking to municipalities, talking to fleets, we see it every day. The market acceptance that is here today and wasn't here a few years ago. But I think that McKinsey for the first time showed that it's really a valid market.
Yes.
So we somehow believe that it's some kind of a, as we call it, the aha moment, the moment that in 2017, probably a year before, nobody would have believed a Lyman bird will pop out to the world and hundreds of cities will explode in a minute. And for me, I think that the most important or interesting thing over here, it's not the logistics around it, which is super difficult, but it's actually market education, which is much, much more harder even than logistics.
Mm-hmm.
So educating hundreds of cities, millions of users to use virtual e-scooter for the first time in just 1 year, it's like a magic.
Yeah.
And it's happened because I think that there was unmet demand. People were unsatisfied from the way that they transport in cities, and they were looking for a small form factor, flexible way to maneuver inside cities, which is still a private one. And not only public. Some prefer public, some prefer private.
Yes.
And you're right about European cities. Now, going to the L7 or the mini mobility, we believe that we are in these moments in time that 2017, maybe 2016, of the e-scooters, shared e-scooters, probably in the coming 2 or 3 years. And that seems to be the timeline, and McKinsey showed it. So we are preparing for it. We've went through homologation, as you asked before, with the TÜV SÜD in Germany, because the first ever foldable or adaptable chassis vehicle needs to be approved in Germany, the most strict one.
Exactly.
but eventually, you're absolutely right. In Europe, there are people that no matter what you say, as long as you are more than 2 wheels, they will not accept you.
Yeah.
And some municipalities. We in this case are positioning ourselves different, and we really believe that we are looking at ourselves as a premium mini mobility, the premium in this new segment. So it's not a Twizy or Ami, especially the Citroën Ami, that although it has an L6, tries to be the lowest in price, the cheapest one. We are looking to become the premium one, and for becoming a premium one, it really means that you attract the people from the Audis and BMWs that are driving in Germany today. Take City Transformer for the week, take your vehicle for the week and drive to Munich, to Berlin or whatever. But I think that this is a little bit of a different selling point, and then you need to provide them a premium vehicle to change it. But then the impact is much bigger because you convert people not from e-scooters, sometimes like, or e-bikes, or sometimes like a Citroën Ami, but take them from their Audis, and then you really make a change in the city.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the argument also that Oliver Obutur from Microlino has also been making. We've had him on the podcast as well. His episode is forthcoming, but that's exactly the same one as well, right? That there's this opportunity that exists for this premium. There are a lot of people. I mean, it's you see it already with Porsche. You know, the way that they're selling their Porsches, for example, is that they'll pull a you know, the new Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo into the garage, and there'll be an electric bike on the wall. Like, people know that this is a thing, and like smart, the sort of premium level. If you've got enough space inside of your garage, you want to have one of these. I think that will be the new thing to be able to show it off. To like, I don't know if you did you ever see Silicon Valley from HBO, the television show?
Yeah.
They had that, like, I forget the name of the character. He was in season one, but he used to drive around in the Tango, which is like the single seater car. And I've always thought that was hysterical because it's totally the thing, right? It's like
that's a narrow car.
Yeah.
Those billionaires.
yeah, totally. Right. It's a billionaire car. Like it's a thing. I still think that there's this, the world in which people will realize that, like, to be high status is to drive around in a vehicle like this, but you know, that'll come. I am very curious as well. Like, so talk me through the company. Like, you clearly have built this for a long time. Like, I know you founded it in 2014, and I actually remember watching you with some of the very early versions of the chassis when you were driving them around Israel and you put videos online. I didn't make that connection till way later that I'd been seeing these things, and it was crazy. I mean, it was talk us through the story. Like, how did that happen? How did you even think about it in the first place? Like,
So thinking about it in the first place was actually moving to the big city, understanding that problems in maneuvering inside the city, congestion. Actually, a city like Tel Aviv, you can sometimes circle the block at night about 50 minutes until you find parking. And sometimes people prefer not to move their car at night so they don't go out or just buy taxis. So it's crazy. It's not the only city, of course. And sometimes you even have to wait in line for 30 minutes just until you have a place in the parking lot.
Wow.
So it's a completely crazy, but it's not only the dedicated or only the case of Tel Aviv. And when you zoom out and you understand that it's a global phenomena, then you start thinking what can be different. And we started mapping different technologies and different revolutions that will probably happen also in the automotive industry and whether they are enough or not. I mean, going for electric vehicles and then autonomy. But so let's start with electric vehicle and taking, and we understood that taking a picture, satellite picture, 10 years from now, you see tons of Tesla and others that weren't available that day in 2014. But seeing a lot of them, even if the whole city will be converted to EV, the same size, the same footprint is over there. So same congestion.
It's the same geometry, right?
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. You switch it out. You switch it out. You end up with the same traffic. Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe the air is cleaner. That's the only thing. But which is good, but it's not enough. So when we understand the footprint is the most important thing over here. And when you see also cities after city, you get example from Detroit, but from Stockholm as well. But cities that 50% of their area, of a city area, or the public city area, is dedicated to roads, parking lots, and other. It's really crazy. And it's some kind of a vicious cycle because when you have vehicles, more vehicles inside cities and more people, you need more roads and more cars. And then you take up more area, so people are going out of city center, and then you need to build more roads. So it's a vicious cycle, and the only way to solve it is getting into more public transportation, micro-mobility or mini-mobility, small form factor. And then we understood it, so we said, okay, the smallest form factor is a motorcycle that we can really pack one or two person inside it. But because of stability issues and then deciding to do this mechanism, so we started gathering actually a team of multidisciplinary coming from different areas. I myself coming from physics and computer science, a background also as an entrepreneur in solar energy and internet and space and satellites. So different areas. My partner Asaf is coming from a PhD in mechanical engineering. a vast management experience in different kind of places. Eyal, another co-founder, Eyal Kramer, our chief designer, has spent time at the beginning of his career at Volkswagen and Volvo, but he's actually more of a product designer for the last 10 years or so. So a lot of other people in our team, also people that has background, automotive background, but not the classical one, not the OEM's one, because we really believe that in order to create and disrupt an industry, you need to create a multidisciplinary team. So did it, went into 3 years of bootstrapping. 2017, we had, after the platform, the real form factor of the first technology demonstrator and car. It's the fifth generation that was presented over there. Prior to this, we decided to take a step forward. My partner, Asaf, and myself invested in the company. And then we continued to work much, much faster in order to bring more vehicles to the road. Today, there are two prototypes, which are the seventh generation, passed homologation at TÜV SÜD, Germany. Most of our work is being done both in Israel, but both in European countries.
Yes.
Germany, France, and Italy.
Yeah. And the plans for production, like you've got them to this point, you've got them verified. How are you thinking about the production element of it?
So that's a good one, because eventually most of the money lies in manufacturing and supply chain at the automotive industry. And the question is whether going to something simplistic as we wished at the beginning, like more like e-bike shops that can repair these vehicles or do something like this, and also manufacturing or assembly in a much more leaner way, but a less professional way, as mass manufacturer of a vehicle, I mean, for the other side. And the other extreme is to go for mass manufacturing, which costs a lot of money, hundreds of billions, and most of the EV startups actually failed in this stage.
Yes.
Getting the money. So we chose to do something in between, because we were our vehicle is mainly aimed to a B2B, actually, because we want to create bigger impact. So high quality is important, low carbon emission as well. So we will be manufacturing in Europe, and we thought of taking and created some kind of a two-step approach. So first step is going and doing things at the leanest way, with emphasizing time to market as the one most important thing. So working with a lean manufacturer that can get us up to 10 to 15,000 vehicles per year, that's our goal now. And at the same time, talking to different, more classic manufacturers that we can do scaling afterwards. So we really believe, as mentioned in McKinsey report and what's behind it, and we see the trends also in the market and talking to people, we would like to be able to do this scaling in the right timing. And for this, you need probably to get the bigger money inside. This will be a second stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. And the like, in terms of the traction, like where have you got to in terms of, you know, selling the vehicles? I have seen them available on a pre-sale, if I remember correctly. So you've gone out and done a pre-sale. Is that typically like how you're thinking about it, that most of these things will be pre-sale, or are they also, you know, are there other channels that you're thinking about doing as well?
So there are other channels. I mean, the classical car industry is transforming also from everybody's doing distribution, using distributors, and everybody is looking and jealous about Tesla doing direct to consumer. So the truth in our case is lying in between. We'll do something in between, something like an agent dealer model in specific cities, but as much as possible direct to consumer. That's our goal. And for this, we started this campaign. Actually, although we are mainly focusing on B2B, and that's we are doing by ourselves in the meantime, sharing fleets. We got demand also from people, from B2C clients. And that's the reason for starting this campaign, which will probably take off more and more at the end of this year, beginning of next year. Eventually, the go-to-market approach is easier in a city car. So what we are doing is actually city by city. So you don't need to say, okay, we started Germany, let's cover the whole of Germany. It's enough that I cherry pick five or four cities, and then I just cover Berlin, Stuttgart, let's say, and Munich.
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of approach that we are trying to do, and still figuring out what's the best way to do so.
Yeah. Have there been, you know, like the shared model, I think, is one of these ones that, especially for these particular kinds of vehicles, I think is really well matched, right? Like that you've got, people are looking for a shared vehicle. Oftentimes they're only traveling by themselves. They don't necessarily want to buy them. You know, they might look at this vehicle and say, I wouldn't buy a motorbike. I don't really want to buy this, but I would happily pay to consume it on a sort of shorter time basis, as you can kind of get with cars, especially if they're more densely populated than I would have it with a standard car, because they're smaller. I can fit them in on my street or whatever it is. Have you found any of the, like, what's the traction been like with sharing companies around that?
So it's very interesting, and I think that for this, in traction wise, we were also pushing some kind of efforts in other places. So for working with fleets, you need to create credibility.
Yes.
So some credibility is coming from working with the big suppliers, automotive suppliers, as they feel comfortable to do so. Some others is going through awards and other things. And I'm happy to say that in the last year we've been nominated. I mean, a German Innovation Award, German Design Award, European Product Award. So, I mean, it's a very good job that the team did. But
you know, it's funny that you say all these things. The thing that I think lends you the most credibility, Udi, is that you had, was it Freddie Flintoff or it was whoever it was from Top Gear that, like, where they went and drove around Paris and they had an e-carver, you and a Citroen Ami. And it was like, oh man, you made the big times because you're clearly like one of the vehicles they picked for that. Yeah.
So actually that's an interesting story behind it. So
yeah.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I as a young kid, I was watching, of course, and loved Top Gear very, very much.
Yes.
And, after working and after having this seventh generation in Munich, just a few months afterwards, or actually 8 months prior to now, we got an email from Top Gear saying, okay, we cherry picked a City Transformer, as you mentioned, with Carve and Citroën Ami, to do an article or a piece about the return of the microcar in Paris.
Yes.
So just bring your industrialized vehicle for 2 days. So we told them, listen, industrialized vehicle will be in 2 years.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, come in 2 years. Let's talk in 2 years again. And then we talked to them again, just contact them again. We say to the producer, we said, listen, it's a mature prototype. So they said, doesn't matter. We don't do prototypes in the show. It's mandatory. So listen, and we said, listen, it's gone through through German regulation. It has driven thousands of kilometers. Just come and check it and decide for yourself. So I'm happy to say that about them, that they 2 days afterwards they were flying to Munich. They driven the City Transformer, and the day afterward we got a phone saying, "Okay, you are on the show."
Yeah! Wow! And, that was cool. Yeah, I mean, it was.
So it's the first ever vehicle for totally. Not being being a prototype on the shore.
Yeah, yeah. That's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, it was to me, it also felt as well like the Top Gear moment when they did that show. So for folks who are like completely lost as to what we're talking about, there was so Top Gear, the premier motoring show globally, did an episode, was it last year? I think it would have been, must have been last year.
Yeah, in November.
November, right. And they had the presenters go to Paris and they were like driving around and they decided to get them city cars. And it was like micro cars. And so they had the Citroën Ami and the Carver, which is a tilting three-wheeler, single wheel at the front, two at the back. Also going to have them on the show at some point very soon. And the City Transformer. And then they had a race around the city to see who could like collect the most things. And it was, to me, like, wow, micromobility has made it. Like, if we're talking about this stuff now and Top Gear's covering it, like, mini mobility is a thing. It might not be right on the cusp yet, but, you know, in terms of, like, as you say, the vehicle itself is still a prototype. It's not yet in production, but I can imagine that it's been, from a cultural kind of zeitgeist perspective, it's really cool that, you know, they recognize, oh, like, this is kind of how the future is going. Did you get a chance to talk to the producers about, like, why they picked this, why they chose to do this in the first instance? What was the motivation on their side?
So we got some, we didn't have too much of a chance to talk to them. Actually, they just get the vehicles, the talents are getting the vehicles and just driving them.
Yes.
We did get a lot of insights from them afterwards. Actually, they loved the vehicles and they loved what we're doing. But I think that for the first time, they really understand that something happens. So even if the same episode have a super or hypercar and then the mini mobility, they still understand, and a lot of people understand that something is being changed and is changing over here. And we saw it maybe the best at the IAA Mobility when we exposed our vehicle. So 2 or 3 years prior to doing this, we did it at the September 2021. But 2 or 3 years prior to this, probably no mini mobility or no small car would have ever get traction over there or somehow, because it was only V8, V12, big engines, Ferraris, yeah, and others, or big Daimler cars that are doing it. At this was the first year that it was mainly about EVs, and a lot of OEMs didn't want to show too much of the big engines, which are ICE engine and not EVs. So it was also market acceptance over there for electric vehicles. And at the same time, we were pretty much astonished also from press and media coverage that was at the IAA for the first time. And we actually won there to be one of the 10 cars of the show by Forbes magazine. The other ones were all Porsche and VW and the others. Yeah, but it shows the trend towards something different. And that's the most important thing. Also media, also municipalities, and we are doing roadshows in municipalities, understand that they want to, especially in Europe, they just want to kick out cars from city centers in a lot of places.
Totally. I think the part that I'm like waiting for is it feels like we're on the cusp and then there's going to be a flood of this. And yet I also am like talking to you, I'm talking to Microlino, I'm talking to Nimbus, I'm talking to eCarver, I'm talking to the other guys who are building, you know, I haven't yet talked to the Citroen Ami team, but I am planning on it, I hope so. And anybody building these is like, you're in a world of pain, you know, like it's crazy to me that there's like billions of dollars being deployed into autonomy, being deployed into, you know, crazy big projects for stuff. And yet anybody who's trying to build like the small micro stuff is still having a real, like it's a challenging thing. And I can't quite work out why, because it feels to me, and maybe I'm like, and I acknowledge I may be wrong about the thesis that consumers don't want this. But my theory is like, consumers do want this. They just haven't been able to buy one. They can't buy one with the things that are required to be able to buy that. And it's the same situation as I feel like we were in prior to the Tesla Model S coming out, when it was like people wanted to buy an EV. They just were like, well, all the EVs suck, or they're not available, or like, you know, and what's required is a really good quality, exciting vehicle gets to production, and then you can buy one and then you can use it and show it off to your friends, and people go like, oh yeah, that's cool, I want one of these. I mean, like, how have you thought about the market validation element to it? Because clearly you started building this in 2014. Like, you could see that there was something coming. You knew that we were going to get there. But what has been the stuff that's happened, especially in the last, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, that proved to you that you feel like our market is validated? Like, if we can build these things, that people will come.
So first of all, when we started, and then all the years down the road, we were trying all the time to check ourselves and validate it with people in conferences, in other places, with the fleet that we are talking and others. And I might say that market acceptance 8 years ago wasn't there at all. And it's just popped up in the last 3 or 4 years. But we also fine-tune, and all the time are fine-tuning our product. It's that's maybe one of the assets that startups owns compared to a big company or to big OEM. You can pivot yourself and fine-tune your product. And with the big guys, it's very, very hard for them to do so. So we were mapping competition, which was back then at the beginning, at early days, mainly the Twizy, and now a few others. I'm talking about Twizy and Citroen Ami, and not about the small players that, of course, we're also in discussion with. Maybe I will elaborate a little bit later. But we all see ourselves pushing together towards something or some goal. But analyzing what's really missing for the L7 category was back then, first of all, safety. And with the perception of L6, L7, and that's one of the things of market acceptance, you were absolutely right. We talked to a lot of people that told us, listen, I will not take my son or daughter in these kind of vehicles. And that's the first point.
This is like the Twizy.
Yes.
And even the Ami.
Yeah. Without mentioning specific names, but yes, the overall is there. Yes. It's not safe enough in the perception of people. So we wanted to set a goal to create the safest vehicle in the category. So that's the first one. Second one, in order to really attract people and also getting feedbacks from a lot of people during the way, it's looking also for the user experience. So you cannot provide today a vehicle which is super basic with a screen of 5 inches, black and green screen. Yeah. You need to do, it's a completely new world. You need to be connected all the time. You need to do something special. And there we started a very, very interesting co-development and cooperation with Bosch, which we actually are exposing it this week as we speak in Milan and Turin in a roadshow that we have as a City Connect, as the first vehicle that is really built in order to share or ready to share out of the box vehicle, which is another USP, but it's also connected to the whole infotainment and application system that we are co-developing with them to create a unique user experience and to create a vehicle that can be shared. And then lastly, eventually you need to create also for fleets. And that's the most important thing for them. They would like their users to use it, but eventually they look at the TCO, the total cost of ownership. And then you either go for the least or the inexpensive product, which is like, let's say, the Citroën AMI. That is one approach. It's the cheapest product out there. It lasts less, but it has its advantages in terms of price. Or you go for a much, much more quality vehicle. You pay more, but the residual value is one of the most important things for fleets. Maybe it's a boring thing for some of the B2B2C users, but important for fleets.
Totally. And it's one of these tricky things as well, because it's like, how on earth do you assess this for a new vehicle type that does, you know, oh, wow, it's like the wheels go in and out. It's like, I don't know how to assess what that's worth in like 5 years' time when it's got 25,000 kilometers on the clock. I don't know. The one, I want to go back to the Citroën AMI, by the way, because I think the one thing that the Twizy never did super well, and I completely agree with you. The safety wasn't there, and also the weather protection wasn't there. Like, they only made them open. And then the AMI came along, and like, the AMI is suboptimal. It's only 50 kilometers an hour max, and it's like plastic. Even then, they sold 20,000 of them in France last year. 20,000 is, you know, that's a 250 million euro business. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. It's nothing exciting, I imagine, for a large automaker, but it's, yeah, I do think that's like, okay, we're starting to prove out, like, this is starting to get interesting. I think we maybe need like a couple of billion dollars worth of these vehicles to start being sold. And then all of a sudden, I think that we might start seeing a bit of a gold rush in the space.
So I think in this regard, it's first of all, don't get me wrong, so it's not just the startups competitors, but also the Twizy and the AMI. We share respect to all of them, because eventually this market needs education. And the way to educate the market is more and more players pushing this market forward. Some of these players, like Citroën AMI, are looking for a lower price point, and they can attract a lot of people like this. We are looking at a higher price point, attracting different kind of people like this. So it's eventually important to have.
Because the price point that you're aiming for is how much again?
So 16,000 pre-tax, which is around 19,000 most European countries MSRP. That's where we are aiming for the B2C version. We have a higher luxury B2C version and another lower B2B version. So we have three of them, but this is the more or less the basic B2C version.
Yes. And in terms of the like competitors that you can see coming down the pipe, like, who do you think about as being like, oh yeah, we're going to have to compete with these folks in the premium micromobility space?
So first of all, when you overview all, and because the L7, L6 category almost doesn't exist or didn't exist 2 years ago, let's say, and then now things are starting to improve, at least with the L6 and Citroën AMI, but the numbers are not there. So you open and look around and see what else can be done and who are else the competitors that you need to attract from. So in our case, it's mainly cars that we are attracting people from. You get even statistics, each kind of statistics that you get, even for places like Copenhagen in Denmark, which is a classic place for public transportation and for a tradition of e-bikes and others. And there's still a large amount of people that use for some of their trips cars, and are not willing to give up cars. So for them, micro-mobility or e-bikes are not the answer, because they would already switch to it. And for them, public transportation is not the answer, because there is a great public transportation in Copenhagen, but it's not the answer. So you need some kind of a different form factor and a different thing. And this positioning is very important for this. But eventually, looking at McKinsey report again, so it's a blue ocean. If you are now at less than a billion and you will get to 340 in a coming decade, and even 110 billion in Europe alone. So everybody that will join at this time, we see them as partners to educate the market. And since the potential is so huge, everybody is welcome to this. It's not a competition yet. It's just trying to push together all of us this forward.
I'm curious as well, like, the subsidy question. So I know, for example, that we've got like a lot of cities around the world or jurisdictions, Europe in particular, has been very aggressive on giving e-bike subsidies. They've given EV subsidies. Has there been any subsidies given to L7s at this point?
So it's a very tricky one. We think that as we see it, and that's the reason for also pushing it forward, all of us together, that L7 or L6 is not like the unpreferred sons, if you may call it. So
yes,
in a lot of places, in a lot of countries in Europe, you can purchase today even a 4-ton Hummer EV and get the subsidies of 5,000 to 9,000 euros. Well, if you get the same city transformer, Microlino and other, you get zero. And it's completely crazy.
Yes, mad. Completely mad.
From the other side, we, and I'm really an advocate for cargo bikes and others, and I think that it's good that they got a chance to ride in narrow lanes or in bike lanes. But eventually, it's also an uneven competition, because if we are also set ourselves as a cargo vehicle, driving at the same speed, at the same lane, our footprint is actually smaller from the others, and maybe a little bit safer, at least for the driver. We don't get to drive there. So it's and I'm really favor for this, for the e-bikes and the cargo bikes and others, but it's an unfair competition in both sides, and especially from the car that get huge subsidies. So for this, what we started doing is actually forming a coalition of L7 to try and push forward some kind of a subsidies, because it really doesn't make any sense that this vehicle will not get them, and the big OEMs, no matter how they drive, if you drive a 2, 3, 4 vehicle, EV vehicle, you get a big subsidies. So we have already Microlino on board. We have Yoyo on board, and we are now looking to join a few others to have them on board to advocate also for benefits for L7 and L6.
This is fascinating. I haven't heard of any subsidies that are coming down the pipe. Certainly none are now. Micromobility subsidy tracker, which I'm going to give a little shout out to. Go and check it out, micromobility.io, global subsidy tracker. Yeah, so I think it's like a question, right? Like, I can see McKinsey is obviously talking about it. They've been writing about mini mobility over the last little while, and Kirsten in particular is really excited about this. And it's a timing thing as well. Like, I think, you know, there weren't e-bike subsidies 5 years ago, really anywhere, and now it's the new big thing. And I think, you know, give it another, maybe I hope it's not 5 years, but the rest of the world will kind of go like, oh man, we should really not be subsidizing like the Hummer EVs and be subsidizing the L7s. And it's just a question of the timing and that one. I want to understand as well, like, the journey of fundraising for you as well. Like, I know you raised 10 million in 2021, but can you take me through the kind of the fundraising journey and like what the venture capital market is like in Israel for funding this? Like, who did you manage to raise 10 million off?
So like in every startup, and especially if we are on road for a lot of years, it's not that easy to fundraise, especially for hardware. So Israel has a lot of VCs, thousands of startups, and it's a very, very a good market. If you are, in terms of venture capital, is also connected to the US very strongly, especially if you are doing software, chips, medical device, and other. So for this, it's relatively easy. Going for VCs, classic VCs, and saying, okay, I want to develop a vehicle, but it's not only a vehicle, it's also a software part, and it's also a new business model. Whatever, the minute that they heard EV or vehicle or small vehicle, they say, okay, it's very, very interesting, but it's not in our vertical, this. And the conversation is over. So during the life of the company, we've raised up until now $20 million US dollar. The last round was 10. And it started from ourselves, first of all, proving that we can make it, and we want to invest, and took loans just to invest in the companies ourselves. Then got angels through the way for the first, almost for the first 10 million. It was in a few tranches, or in a few pre-seed and then seed and then another one. And then in round A, when we raised 10 million, it was for the first time, if you may call it strategic Israelis, companies, which was mainly going for distributors, big distributor of cars, or the one that are operating buses and hotels and others, so, and real estate companies as well. So it was interesting to see, because one of our unique model eventually is going for sharing, and sharing for real estate and other places is, and it's mainly taking the advantage of our vehicle. But next stage, or next round of investment, round B that we are now initiating, is aimed, and it's a 20 million round, and it's aimed to start attract also strategics, and not only the classic investors from Israel, and not only the classic angels or super angels or others, they can invest, because eventually you need more money to get on road. It's not a bicycle, but it's not a car. It's something in between.
Yes.
But it requires also the capital in between, not like a bike.
Totally.
Hopefully not like a car.
Are there strategics that you've identified that you think, oh, they are really good fit for what we're trying to do? I mean, I hear you on the like real estate players, et cetera. Like, I can totally see why they would find it attractive, though. I also am like, this is a very interesting investment for them because typically they wouldn't do VC style stuff. They have a different risk profile for the capital, but that's by the by. Yeah, like, what would be the strategics kind of, but what do you think the strategics will be?
So it's still a traditionally, as it's four-wheelers, it's usually a traditional a car game. So we are looking at the whole automotive industry and mapping the automotive industry. Yes. We still need to get suppliers on board. So suppliers are very important, and probably one of the big suppliers, getting them on board and involved, even in the co-development or other things like Bosch in the infotainment application and shared system of connectivity. But also some of the tier ones might be a good candidate because it also assists in providing credibility for other tier ones to join. Another potential ones are manufacturers, because eventually we try to innovate when we need to innovate. If we don't need to innovate somewhere, like manufacturing the vehicle, and we can take a contract manufacturer that does it better and more years than us, that's the play. Some of the old automotive industry understanding that something is really different here. Something is changing for them, so the atmosphere is changing. So everybody wants to take part, but not want to be the first. So it goes the same for T1s, for OEMs, for contract manufacturers, and even for dealers and or bigger dealer networks. Everybody understands that something is different here and are willing maybe to hedge themselves a little bit. And some of them might be interesting players for us.
Yeah, totally. Fantastic. Well, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is interesting that that maybe I should ask you?
Maybe just one thing regarding maybe the, I know that Horace mentions it in a lot of your podcasts, and you have also mentioned it about the iPhone moment.
Yes.
And
yeah, totally. Okay, yeah. Talk me through what you think the iPhone moment is.
So first of all, no one can predict the future. Nobody knows where the iPhone moment, where it will be and when. One thing that I'm trying to look at is what you really need in order and analyzing also the real iPhone moment. So it was a combination, I think, of hardware, first of all. You needed a unique hardware for the first time without keyboard, looks different, more robust, bigger processing power, but also, of course, the software that comes with it, which is unique and creates a lot of alternatives. So when you have the hardware and software, and as well as the design and branding side, which is very important because I'm not sure that anybody but Apple in these days could have made the same impact with the iPhone as Apple did. So it's not enough to have this software hardware. But when you have all of the three of them, then what's really interesting is trying and starting to create a new business models out of it. And I can give you one example that we are doing. When we developed the City Transformer, so as mentioned, it was a ready-to-share vehicle, as now, of course, and it's a super, super narrow and small vehicle. And these two, plus the ability to share the vehicle with the software, and plus other things that we are doing, has brought an organization like United Hatzala. United Hatzala is an organization, a life rescue organization in Israel, one of the biggest ones. And they are having a few thousands of motorcycles that they are trying to be the first to assist in case of accidents or medical.
Right.
Now, their people are going through accidents when they try to assist others. So they invest, they have an accident per day. So they invest.
Oh, you mean like, in other words, they're going on motorbikes to try and assist somebody else and then they themselves crash on the way to the crash.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow.
Almost once a day.
Wow.
So they were looking to something else. They're putting millions of education to driving education, but eventually they were looking for different form factors. Now they're checking all kind of small vehicles and other solutions, but eventually, different from the small vehicles they that they have now, they brought a few Chinese small vehicles to test. Eventually, they found in the City Transformer that the ability to share the vehicle, the inherent ability and the small factor and the ability to carry cargo and to customize the vehicle allowed them to create a completely new business model for them, which or operational model in their case, and saying instead of having thousands of people with either volunteers or employees using our motorcycle to get to events, we can spread around vehicles in the city. It's like a stationary vehicle that's parking them because they are small in each and every place. equipped already. And then when you have a call, so every volunteer or every employee sees it on its smartphone and can reach out the nearest city transformer, just open it with a smartphone and just drive and arrive it to the destination. So it's a completely new operational model. And I really believe that new business model will really arise to make the iPhone moment. So it's not just a vehicle that maybe, I don't think that it will last two or three years, need to be replaced because of environmental issues. Eventually, it's not a phone, but a car. But you need to create with this hardware, software, design and branding, also a new business model. And I think this will be the real iPhone moment that nobody really knows where or when.
Totally. I mean, I hear you on the new business model. If you ask me, my thesis is that there is going to be a kind of coming together of a lot of these different things, which is you want speed. You want the ability to be able to like interface with every road environment that you might find. So if you have to go on the highway, you want to go on the highway. You don't want to feel like you're totally unsafe on the highway. You want to be able to go the same speed as other cars, but it also should be the footprint of a motorbike, but it should have safety, should have weather protection, and it should also kind of benefit from a lot of the things that you would expect when you're in a small, like in a city, and you go like, I want to be able to move around the city as if it's a small vehicle. And I don't know what that looks like. I do think the idea of variable width is like an interesting take on it. And maybe that'll be the iPhone moment. I mean, what I would need to see to really get convinced is that it's not only this, right? Like the reason the iPhone was so successful was like, yeah, it was a computing platform, but it was a form factor and it's a combination of hardware and software and all this sort of stuff. But it was like things got built on top of that because it was, you know, it became a new platform. It became a new way that you could do things in a city or in a like with computing that you couldn't do before. And I think that's what you've picked out a right thing about the business model and the fact that new things get enabled. I'd want to see like, what are the 50,000 versions of those that everybody goes like, oh yeah, because this new tech capability exists on this vehicle, it means that I can do completely new things that I haven't been able to do before. I think that's where Horace in particular, and maybe I'm totally butchering what he was trying to say when he talked to me through this, but it was like, the key point that he had is that this should create and enable new behaviors that we haven't seen before. And so obviously I'm backfilling as to what I think the prerequisites to that new behavior would have to look like. But yeah.
I completely agree. So I don't say that with City Transformer is the iPhone moment.
Yes.
I completely agree that nobody knows the iPhone moment. But the combination of this unique hardware software let us experience new different kind of business model. I will give you maybe another example. So eventually we are now, and the reason for real estate companies to invest in City Transformer is eventually taking entrepreneurs into city centers, building a 20 or 30 floor skyscraper in the middle of Milan, let's say, or Berlin. And now when you approach them and say, okay, provide me 50 parking places, I will put you 200 city transformer. All of them are shared. So nobody, you take the first one, it doesn't matter. So then you and everybody in an app can reserve the vehicle a day ahead. So they know that they go to the supermarket or pick up their son with this vehicle or just going for a meeting. This really creates a different, eventually will create a different user behavior because slowly and gradually, you get accepted to the fact that you don't need to move your big car. It costs money. It takes time. Just move this car during the week a lot and lot and more time. And then your weekend, you will stay with the big car. So the same here, the ability to squeeze them up to four of them and to be shared, inherently shared, creates a new business model over here and a new user behavior for specific users inside the building. So it solves vandalism because it's inside a building. It's easier to maintain and there is a management company. A lot of other things happens just because you have the right hardware-software combination for it.
I buy that. I'd love to see it happen. So, hey, look, Udi, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. I know this took way longer than it should have to be able to get us coordinated in terms of time zones so that we could make this happen. But I so appreciate your time and the effort. And like, again, hats off. Like anybody in this space, anybody who's building stuff, I hats off to you for keeping going. And I wish you all the best and looking forward to having you on in the future where we can talk about what the iPhone moment was when we finally retrospectively identify it. So, yeah, thank you.
So thank you very, very much for this opportunity. You're doing a great and very, very important job to push all this understanding of micro mobility and minimum mobility forward. I think it will make our cities much, much better. and hopefully to see you test driving City Transformer in the coming
months. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. I want to channel my inner Freddy Flintoff, and zoom around some fun city sometime. Excellent. Hey, well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Same. Thank you very, very much.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Cheers.